Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Teacher unions in Florida halt the reopening of schools. In the meantime, unions delay school openings and layoffs in New York City. An IBEW member tells Trump, do your job. And today on the show, the latest from Kelly and Ferraro and what union members are doing at the VA starting today. Good afternoon and welcome to the Thursday, September 3rd edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on various platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and don't forget our Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. You can follow us there. We have two guests on the show today, this being the first Thursday of September. We put this segment aside for the fine attorneys at Kelly and Ferraro, located in downtown Cleveland, Ohio, and they do have a national presence. Practicing nationwide, you can call them at this number, 1-800-398-1795. This is a group of attorneys that does quite a lot. Specialty is asbestos, mesothelioma. They're heavily involved in the Zantac case. The FDA reported that the heartburn medication Zantac is linked to various forms of cancer. Roundup, the weed killer, that's a big case. And they deal with product liability, medical malpractice. And today the subject is probate law and estate planning. And joining us is Dana DePiro. She joined Kelly and Ferraro back in 2004 as an associate. Previously, she worked for a law firm handling personal injury cases. She's a graduate of the Cleveland Marshall College of Law at Cleveland State University. And she is also a partner in the law firm. And she's going to get into what estate planning is all about. There's a lot of people, especially generation about to retire. And boy, I tell you, there's been so many bumps in the economy. Think back to the financial meltdown, 2007, 2008, how that kind of really had to rebalance portfolios, pension funds. We've seen a lot of defined benefit plans disappear, 401k plans, defined contribution plans. So a lot of people, when it comes to estate planning, They had a lot of work to do because of the topsy-turvy market. And Dana's going to talk about that and give us some really good advice on what you need to do to prepare for your children. That's what this is all about. Normally, we have Senator Sherrod Brown, but the Labor Day weekend is taking him away for that today. Ben Spite will be joining us. Ben is the director of the National VA Council Crisis Response Campaign, and this is on behalf of one of our premier sponsors here in America's Workforce, the American Federation of Government Employees. And what they're doing is mobilizing VA staff nationwide, and this is all to call out COVID-related workplace safety issues. That's number one. Also, the systemic racism that's happening at the Veterans Administration. Also, Secretary Wilkes, he's the Secretary of the VA, his assaults on VA employees' collective bargaining rights. A little background on Ben. He's been a union organizer for 20 years, much of that time with the Teamsters. And what they're doing, starting today, they are having gatherings and pretty much a lot of outreach actions happening in various cities. Today it's in Milwaukee, and then I'm seeing events, a lot of them on Labor Day and next Tuesday, Leavenworth, Kansas, Las Vegas, Nevada. That's going to happen tomorrow. St. Louis, Missouri. There's two events happening in St. Louis on Labor Day. Augusta, Georgia, Minneapolis on Tuesday, Little Rock, Arkansas, Hampton, Virginia, that's happening today, Minneapolis, Minnesota, Riverside, California, Philadelphia, Tampa, and Columbus, Ohio. Columbus, Ohio is happening today. Ben is out of Atlanta, and he's just going to run down specifically these call to actions, what they're all about. And it's, again, we're, what, 2 months till Election Day? Hard to believe that's the case. And there's a lot of concerns about voting, a lot of concerns about where people stand. And the two candidates, well... they're not even close. You got Biden on one side and you got Trump on the other. So we're going to talk about all of that with Ben Spite as our second guest right here on America's Workforce. Florida's millions of school kids headed back to class this week, but thanks to their teachers union, not to brick and mortar buildings where an unsafe state plan could have exposed them, their teachers, their bus drivers, their parents, and their communities to the coronavirus. You recall the governor down there saying, oh, you got to go to school. Got to go to school. Can't do this distance learning. Well, guess what? It's happening virtually by computer. That's because just days before school was to begin, a federal judge out of Leon County Circuit Court, Charles Dodson, ruled that the governor's Ron DeSantis' plan to force such regular school reopenings, regardless of the safety and health risks, can't happen. It can't. It's actually against the Constitution. He said the reopening of buildings without complete antivirus precautions is dangerous to the teachers, school bus drivers, school staffers, the kids, the parents, and the communities. The Florida Education Association, the Joint Teachers, and that's part of the American Federation of Teachers, National Education Association affiliate in the state, all sued on behalf of teachers, parents, the union, the NAACP, and Miami-Dade all joined in. The governor's order to reopen now is unconstitutional to the extent it arbitrarily disregards safety, denies local school boards decision-making with respect to reopening brick-and-mortar schools and conditions funding on an approved reopening plan with a start date in August, Dodson declared. Now, the governor's plan will, however, pass constitutional muster if its unconstitutional portions are severed, the judge said. Unconstitutional sections ordered the schools to reopen without first determining it would be safe and healthy to do so, he explained. Schools could reopen district by district once public health officials certify that they're safe. Finally, some common sense here, right? If the schools aren't safe, how can you order them back? That's interesting that that's right in the Florida Constitution. After reaching a deal with union leaders this week, Mayor Bill de Blasio announced that New York public schools will delay reopening in person until September 21st. The concession came after unions representing both teachers and administrators pressed that schools would not be safe to reopen on the planned September 10th start date. The teachers' union had threatened to strike if the start date was not delayed. The agreement, which was reached just yesterday between the city and labor leaders, allows for more time to plan the massive overhaul to education that the coming year will require. By the way, the agreement also includes random monthly testing of staff and students for COVID-19, but does not go so far as to require mandatory testing before school buildings reopen. That's something the unions had demanded. In the meantime, a wave of mass public sector layoffs in New York City have been delayed after municipal labor union pressure. Get this, 22,000 city workers were to be laid off October 1. The unions are lobbying for the state legislature to increase the city's long-term borrowing capacity and are pushing to delay layoffs until that issue is resolved. Mayor de Blasio supports the long-term borrowing solution. to stave off the layoffs. He's a union guy, by the way, so he gets it. You know, he's got to balance a few things, but at least the unions are ahead of the game for now. Got a really interesting comment here out of Glenn Brackett. Glenn is a member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. He's also the president of the New Hampshire AFL-CIO. And Glenn released a statement last Friday reacting to President Trump's campaign stop in New Hampshire right after the RNC, Republican National Convention. Check this out. After 4 days of bashing unions and trying to rewrite history of this drastically mishandled COVID-19 response, President Trump is continuing his political tour with a campaign rally in Manchester. Given that it's only been 24 hours since the Department of Labor reported a new national unemployment claim, which was skyrocketing, COVID-19 cases continue to rise in New Hampshire, his time would be better spent actively working to fix the triple threat of crises. He goes on to say, rather than trying to make the people in New Hampshire forget the crises confronting this country, coronavirus, natural disasters in the Gulf and in California, and over 30 million Americans unemployed, Trump shouldn't be at a self-promoting campaign stop or a golf course. He should be at his desk, and he should be doing his job. Once again, that's all coming from Glenn Brackett. Glenn, a member of the Electrical Workers Union and also president of the New Hampshire AFL-CIO, saying we need a president who will do his job. All right, we have to take a break. You're listening to America's Workforce. Our segment with Kelly and Ferraro coming up next. Don't go away.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output. A half million strong, we're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Hey, we're back. It's America's Workforce. Don't forget we're available on various platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. Twitter handle is AWF Union Podcast. You can follow us there. Want to put a plug in for our Labor Day show. I had the opportunity to talk extensively with the president of the AFL-CIO. I'm talking about Rich Trumka. And we got almost a half hour with him, and we are going to air that interview as well as podcast it this coming Monday, Labor Day. And I'll tell you, he was all fired up, and we got into everything. We got into politics, organizing, you name it, the situation at the post office. So that's a special edition of America's Workforce this Labor Day, just days away. All right, let's go to line number one. This is our segment we do each and every month with the fine attorneys at Kelly and Ferraro, kelly-ferraro.com, two L's in Kelly, two R's in Ferraro. And this is a law firm that has an extensive practice. I mentioned at the top of the show, specialty has been asbestos. You might have seen some commercials. I mean, this is a national story about the Zantac recall, Roundup weed killer. Today, we're going to talk about estate planning and probate. And joining us on our live line is Dana DePiro. Dana, welcome to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And this is all you do? I mean, all the other, I know a lot of the attorneys have, there's a lot of work happening at Kelly and Ferraro, but this is your specialty, I understand. Is that correct?
Yes, I've been doing this for the last 15 to 16 years. We work with all the other departments, but this is the department that I am in charge of. And yes, this is the one we handle.
Very good. And congratulations on being named a partner at Kelly and Ferraro. That's quite an honor. Very, very good. Talk to me about probate and estate planning. Let's get real basic here. There are a lot of people listening and they're wondering, well, what is this all about? Do I have to do this? And what happens if I don't do it? I think when you don't do it, that's when families run into all kind of trouble. Why don't you explain what this is all about? Go ahead.
Sure. Probate is a very interesting way of just saying, what happens to my stuff when I die? And so you can do a couple things to make sure that when you pass away, your loved ones get your stuff, for lack of a better explanation. So you can do estate planning, and that way when you pass, your words are written down, and your individual, you know, loved ones get the things that you want them to have. So you can do very simple estate planning. It doesn't have to be time-consuming. It doesn't have to be expensive. For example, if you have a bank account, you can just simply go to the bank and make sure that you have we call it a TOD or a POD, which is transferable on death or payable on death. You add that to your account, and when you pass away, the person that's listed on that transfer on death immediately gets your account. So you don't have to go to the probate court. It's done automatically for you after the fact. Field life insurance policy, you list your beneficiaries so that, again, when you pass away, that money automatically goes to them. So you're able to steer away from the court and make sure that the person or persons you want to receive your home, your bank account, your insurance policy, your 401k, automatically go ahead and get those proceeds. So it's, again, your way of speaking after you have passed away.
You said something that I want to elaborate on. You said steer away from the court, and I know you're referencing probate court. When you steer away, obviously that's for good reason, because when it goes to court, we're talking a lot of time before something is ruled upon, and then I'm sure there's fees involved. Can you explain how complicated these things can get, Dana?
Sure. If you do not have any type of estate planning and you don't have something like a transferable on death or a deed that's joint with rights of survivorship, then typically you have to go to the probate court, and there's 88 counties in Ohio, and all states do it differently. So it's very unique, but you go into your county and you have to open up your next of kin will have to open up your estate in what's called a full administration. And you're going to have to basically tell the court, I'm going to do an inventory of all of his or her assets. This was his house, this was his car, his boat, his bank account, whatnot. And then you have to try to make distribution with the court's authority. And if no one has a will or a document that says, I want this to go here or there, then the court is going to say that you passed away intestate, meaning you didn't leave any type of last will and testament, and they're going to help determine who gets the proceeds. And by that, there's statutes that are set up that who's deemed a next of kin, who's in the class that's presumed to have suffered, who's not in the class that's presumed to have suffered, and they're going to help facilitate who gets the proceeds. Again, the family is involved in that process, but at the end of the day, the court is having more say than the deceased person. So that's why it's extremely important to do estate planning, because you will be able to have control and say who you want to receive your proceeds, even if it's, you know, the local neighborhood church. As long as you put that down in your will, they're going to honor that request.
Yeah, yeah. And it's my understanding, too, I've seen some cases where they go on for years, and what happens, the estate, the money, whatever's in that state, whatever that estate is worth, it dwindles down, and the court absorbs a lot of that. So there is a way to completely, let me just get this straight. There is a way to completely avoid probate then? Is that correct?
Yes and no. Yes, as in if you have just your assets that you're talking about. Yes, you can avoid probate. For example, my grandfather was 103. He passed this year. He had everything already with joint and survivorship. That's a deed. So if you own a home, I know a lot of husband and wives just assume that if, you know, husband passes away, that the spouse automatically gets the home. It depends on how the deed is written. If the deed is joint, then you only own 50% of that home. If the deed is joint with survivorship, then you own 100% upon the other's passing. So it's a really easy document to do and record, so that, again, when your spouse passes away, that house is 100% yours. But back to the fact pattern with my grandfather, everything was a payable on death, transferable on death. The life insurance already had beneficiaries listed, so that when he passed, it was all done. And no one had to worry about, what do we do? Do we hire a lawyer? Do we go into court and have to incur fees and expenses? In addition, you know, he did pre-funeral arrangements, which is an icky topic. Nobody likes to talk about their death. But if you can prepay your funeral, pre-arrange it, that is a huge benefit when you pass away, that your loved ones don't have to go through that process. You know, they don't have to go to that funeral home and pick, okay, dad would really want a service. No, he would like to be cremated. You know, his plot, where he would like to be buried. All of that is done in advance and paid for. So, again, it's truly giving your next of kin, your loved ones, peace of mind when you pass away. It's kind of that last little bit that you take care of for them. And they don't have to go, again, like I said, through the probate process.
It's
a time saver, and it's a huge expense saver.
Yeah. Not only that, you can lock in the price too. I remember growing up. I mean, funerals were nowhere near the cost of what they are today, especially for burials. And I know a lot of people are going for the cremation route. But very, very good advice. Dana, is there any? I don't. This is very uncomfortable for some families. You know that, to sit down and to lay all this out. Is there any time in one's life when they should do this kind of thing? And I'm thinking now, we've got this transfer of wealth going on right now. We've got this huge baby boom population in America, like 70 plus million people. Some of them have already done this, some of them have not. But is there any advice you can give our listeners on when you should prepare all this kind of stuff?
The sooner the better. Again, I know it's not a comfortable topic. Nobody likes to talk about their death, but it's inevitable. And it's not if it's going to happen, it's when. So the sooner the better, because once your loved one gets to an advanced age and now they start losing their mental capacity, now you have a really hard time doing their estate planning, because when someone needs to be of sound mind in order to make these decisions. So again, it's better to do it as soon as possible, because there is a time where you kind of pass the point of no return, that unfortunately, you know, maybe they have dementia or Alzheimer's or something, and they don't have a lucid moment where they can do this.
Right. Good advice. Dana, I got to take a break. You can stay with us for another segment. I have some more questions for you, okay?
Great. Thanks so much.
Dana DePiro is her name. She's one of the fine attorneys at Kelly and Ferraro, proud sponsor of America's Workforce. The nationwide number is 1-800-398-1795. 1-800-398-1795. Also, the website is kelly-ferraro.com. We'll continue the conversation with Dana. Also, Ben Spate will be joining us. Ben is the director of the National VA Council Crisis Response Campaign, part of the American Federation of Government Employees, and they are going to be really, really active starting today all the way to next Tuesday. Want to make some changes in what's happening at the VA. It's all part of America's Workforce. Back in a few minutes. Don't go away.
This is America's Workforce.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange, news, talk, sports, and workforce politics, the fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
Hey, we're back. It's America's Workforce, available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify. Please subscribe to our podcast network, and we would appreciate a rating once you get hooked on the show. 5 stars would be greatly appreciated, no doubt about that. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Dana DePiro, a partner at Kelly & Ferraro, kelly-ferraro.com. The toll-free nationwide number is 1-800-398-1795. We're talking about probate and estate planning. Uncomfortable topic for a lot of people, but sooner or later, you got to deal with it. And if you don't deal with it, things end up in probate. And my gosh, it could take years before a settlement comes out. And as Dana pointed out in the first segment, you got somebody else, a judge, making decisions for your family. You don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. Dana, talk to me about this. I'm seeing in some notes here, it's T-State versus Intestate, Executor versus Administrator. This is a little bit of gobbledygook here. I need some explaining on what we're talking about here. Go ahead.
Sure. Testate is just a fancy word that says you left a legal, valid last will and testament. Intestate is just the opposite. You don't have a written document out there. So again, if you have your will, it basically tells everyone who you want to receive your proceeds and your assets. When you file documentation with the court, and sometimes I want to just clarify, even if you do have estate planning done, sometimes you do need to go through probate court, and we can deal with that at another time. But when you file your opening estate documents with the court, you have to check a box, whether they're testate or intestate. Intestate is they had a will and you submit that, or intestate is you didn't. If you have a will, then you have the executor named, which is who's going to do the driving for the estate, and that's the personal representative. If you are intestate, then you have an administrator, and that's just the one that the court's going to appoint. And it can be a family member or whatnot, but again, executor is the one that you, the deceased person, put in your will, this is who I want to do it. And the administrator is the one that the court's going to approve to be the driver of the estate.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And when it comes to these decisions, say I pick an executor, say it's one of my children, and down the road I feel, you know what, I don't know if that child would be the proper choice. I could change that down the road? Is that easy to do?
Absolutely. And we have a lot of people do that all the time. A lot of husbands and wives do what we call I love you wills or mirror wills, which is I leave it all to wife leaves it all to husband, I name them my executor. But then husband or wife passes away, so then you have a backup executor that you can name in your will. Or you just very easily go back to your estate planner and say, hey, listen, I want to take the wife off now that she's passed, and now I want to put my son or my daughter. The good thing about having a will and listing an executor is that you decide who that person is, whereas in Ohio, if you don't have a will, the court's going to put requirements on that person to become the administrator. For example, you have to be a resident of Ohio. Whereas if you have a will and your executor lives in Florida, while it's not, you know, looked great upon the court, they absolutely will allow that Florida resident to be the executor, to be the personal representative. So again, you have a residency requirement that you have to fulfill. In addition, if you're an administrator, you typically need to be bonded. And if you've had any type of financial troubles in your past, such as bankruptcy, certain criminal acts, you will not be able to get bonded. So again, then you can't serve. Whereas in a will, typically your will is written that you name an executor, you ask that they serve without bond, and again, they don't have that residency requirement. So as uncomfortable as it is, the more you plan in advance, the better it is, because you have a say when you're not here anymore.
Right, right. And when you put that will together, and you could do some of this online if you want. I mean, this is good advice that you're giving our listeners. There's a wealth of information out there. Once you get that will together, does that have to be filed anywhere? I believe it's got to be notarized. Is that all you need to do? What about that? Do I need to file it, though, with a court, however, or what?
You don't have to file it with a court. Some people do put their will on deposit with a court. They make their will. They're happy with it. They put it on deposit. Other individuals, the majority of individuals, they keep it. And it's very important that you know where the original document is. It's also very important that you tell a loved one, if I pass, you know, go to my office in the right-hand drawer, there's my estate planning paperwork. For myself and my husband, we have a file. God forbid one of us pass, the other one just grabs the file, and it has all of our information in there ready to go. So you do not have to put it on deposit with the court. You just have to make sure you obtain an original. And some law firms will hold that original for you. They'll give you a copy, and they will hold it, the original, so that God forbid when you pass away, the family members can come and get it, and we can move forward.
All right, let's move on to product liability cases where people passed away. And I know Kelly and Ferraro has done so much with regard to asbestos litigation, mesothelioma. And you think about that population, many of the workers that were dealing with asbestos have passed away. They obviously have families. The Zantac case is another one that your firm is heavily involved with. Now, when somebody passes away due to like asbestos, what happens in a case like that? I'm sure Kelly and Ferraro had to be at one point or other involved in some of these cases, right?
Correct. And this is where, when we talked before, it was if you have estate planning, you can avoid probate altogether. If you have estate planning, you can avoid probate for your house, your car, your boat, all that jazz. But when you have a product liability case, such as asbestos, or you have Zantac or Roundup or any other avenues that Kelly and Ferraro represent, you have to get that estate open no matter what. And that is because when our clients are living, they do all the talking and walking with us. And if we need to go to trial, they go to trial. If we obtain a settlement, we work with them to negotiate that settlement and essentially at the end of the day, for lack of a better explanation, cut them a check and send them on their way.
Uh-huh.
You can't do that when somebody is deceased. So you need to have a personal representative doing that talking and walking. And that's where you have to probate the estate, even if there's nothing in it. Even if you did all of the estate planning work, then you still need to open the estate in a full administration. And you need to get that executor, which means there was a will, or an administrator if there wasn't, appointed. So you get a letter of authority from the court. And then that person helps Kelly and Ferraro do the walking and talking for the estate. And then once we do receive proceeds from asbestos, Roundup, Zantac, what have you, then we have to tell the court, hey, we've got money. And here's the breakdown of the money. And the court acts as an extra pair of eyes and ears. They make sure that the gross amount is a fair amount. Sometimes we are limited. For example, the asbestos companies are bankrupt. You can't really argue with the settlement. The bankruptcy court says this is what it is. But then you tell the probate court, these are our attorney's fees. These are our suit expenses. Here's the net amount. Specifically, who do we want to give the net amount to? And that net amount then can be distributed to the spouse, the children. But no matter who gets the proceeds, there are certain people that are entitled to notice. So the spouse is always listed on those documents. The next of kin being the children are there. Depending on what county you're in, sometimes they even make you put on the siblings, the grandchildren, and whatnot. So, again, you can avoid probate for a lot of things. Unfortunately, with the product liability, you have to get it open in order to keep pursuing that asbestos claim or roundup or whatnot so that we then can distribute that money to the family.
Yeah. Have you done a lot of those cases, Kelly and Ferraro, especially when there was litigation, say, for instance, with asbestos?
Yes, that is primarily what our job is in our probate department. We have three other fabulous lawyers that I work with in the probate department, and that is what we do. We get those estates open so that our litigation team can move forward on their product liability cases. And then as that money comes in, then we make those distributions. And again, those distributions are always presented to the court and blessed off on the court. Until you get the judgment entry, which is what I call the golden ticket, we can't distribute any money to the family.
Lots of good information here, Dana. You've been awesome on the show. I can see why you're a partner. You know that? You do a great job. Dana DePiro is her name. I'm given the toll-free number. I would imagine that's the best to get a hold of you, with Kelly and Ferraro. People listening right now, I'm sure they've got a lot of questions. The 800 number,
yes,
what do you
please.
Think? Okay, 800-398-1797. 800-398-1797. Go online at kelly-ferraro.com. Two L's in Kelly, two R's in Ferraro. Dana, thank you so much for joining us. Keep up the great work, and I'm sure we'll be talking down the road. This is a very, very good subject to address with our listeners. So take care and enjoy your Labor Day weekend, okay?
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, bye-bye. Quick break. Ben Spate is the director of the National VA Council Crisis Response Campaign. He's working with the American Federation of Government Employees, and he's coming up next right here on America's Workforce. Back in a few.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output, a half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And welcome back to America's Workforce. Don't forget our Twitter handle. You can follow us at AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. This segment, by the way, brought to you in part by the fine folks at the North Coast Labor Federation, part of the AFL-CIO. Before we get to Ben here to talk about the VA Council and what they're doing starting today, just want to give another plug to the Alliance for American Manufacturing, and Scott Paul has been on the show many, many times. They are staging an event tonight at 7 p.m., and if you go to AmericanManufacturing.org, you can join on their Zoom link. It's a virtual event, and the whole idea, it's a special conversation ahead of Labor Day examining how the working class and manufacturing are presented in various forms of media. And they have three amazing panelists: Bob Jury, director of Working Man; Beth Macy, author of Factory Man; and Lynn Nottage, Pulitzer Prize winning playwright of Sweat. And this is all being hosted by Scott Paul. So you can check it. There's no cost to this. How American Culture Depicts the Working Class. Good subject right before Labor Day. So check that out. Just go to AmericanManufacturing.org and get all the information. That's 7 o'clock tonight Eastern Standard Time. All right, let's go to line number two and welcome to the show Ben Spate. Ben is director of the National VA Council Crisis Response Campaign, which is a part of the American Federation of Government Employees, and they are mobilizing, and I mean mobilizing, VA staff nationwide starting today. Hey, Ben, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, it's so good to be with you, and I'm excited to share with you and your listening audience all the great work that we're doing, trying to challenge what is really an unprecedented attack on this union. And I'm really happy to share that there are VA staff that are coming together across this Labor Day weekend to take action to call that out.
Yeah, I see events happening today in Columbus, Ohio, Hampton, Virginia, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, in Las Vegas tomorrow, and then there's events happening on Labor Day and even next Tuesday. And we'll get specific on this. A little background on you. I understand now you haven't been with the with AFGE very long, not since, March, but you spent most of your time with the Teamsters. Talk to me about that part.
Yes, sir. I mean, I've just been blessed to be a part of the labor movement from a young age, not coming from a union family, but trying to organize my own workplace and just knowing and seeing what's at stake when working people do come together. And in places like the South, here in Georgia, where we don't have collective bargaining rights for public sector workers, I realized the short end of that when I got fired from my job as a young man at a public university. But since then, just really been working to organize workers in the South and in the private sector, mostly in transportation. But this fight here at the National VA Council that I've been fortunate enough to connect with, President Alma Lee heads up the NVAC, and then President Everett Kelly is obviously the president of the AFGE, have really seen this fight with the VA as something strategic. And I could not be prouder to work on this level, connecting with locals around the country, Flash. So it's a real opportunity and a blessing.
So, Ben, what's the number one issue right now? Is it because of the pandemic and people aren't safe? Is that what this is going to be all about here?
Well, since really, you know, the pandemic hit, the VA, which has facilities in every part of this country, frontline VA staff have been calling for COVID workplace protections from the very beginning. And in particular, the shortages of PPE and proper effective personal protective equipment on the job has been certainly the number one issue. But the VA has really fumbled this entire crisis. And I say that and not to make light out of it, because in fact, veterans and VA staff's lives have been put at risk every day as they go to work during this pandemic. And this secretary, Robert Wilkie, who's been appointed by Donald Trump, obviously has attempted to misinform the public continuously through this pandemic about what is actually happening to the lives of and the care of veterans. And so we've been hitting the streets very early on during the pandemic, calling that out, and did get some response from the VA at the local level, where we did have mobilizations. They were more willing to provide things like retention incentives or a form of hazard duty pay, but that hasn't been made universal. In fact, most VA workers around the country got nothing, no additional compensation for reporting to duty every day to serve their veteran patients. And as much as we've been calling out other issues like the fact that telework agreements allowing people to work from home should be maintained and expanded, there's just been so many issues that have come out during COVID that many of your listeners are familiar with in their own workplaces. But at the VA in particular, it's been extremely difficult times as staff even try to get access to things like paid leave that's been afforded to other employees but has been denied to them. So that is certainly on the forefront of their minds. But also, there's a long legacy of discrimination against union activity, against people of color, against women, and sadly, tragically, against veterans staff at the VA that we continue to raise awareness about and that really fuels this effort to bring attention to coming this Labor Day.
What are they doing to veterans? I mean, come on, this is the VA. You're supposed to help the veterans. What's happening there, Ben?
Well, what we have found, and this is something that we have backed up empirically through our own surveys the AFG has conducted within its VA staff nationwide, is that just as the case of we have documented that three-quarters of all VA staff that responded to our survey noted that they have personally experienced racism and discrimination in the workplace. And then when you combine that with veterans of color, their experience has been compounded by the fact that they have been even more discriminated against in the workplace, denied opportunities for advancement and promotion. And this is just a sign that points up the underlying fact that our union maintains the largest public sector collective bargaining agreement in the country at the VA. The National VA Council's Master Collective Bargaining Agreement covers 265,000 employees at the VA nationwide. That process that is defined in that agreement, those processes are the ways to resolve disputes, are the means to achieve a fair workplace. And really, I know that you're keenly aware of it because you follow these issues, but for the public to be aware, this Secretary Robert Wilkie is trying to destroy the largest collective bargaining agreement in the public sector. So it shuts down these ways to be heard, whether it's around discrimination or around fair discipline or around workplace safety. And so that we're bringing those issues to light because we have to have a fair contract in order to make sure these abuses don't continue.
It's my impression that Donald Trump wants to completely get rid of the union at the VA and for all federal workers. What is that pretty much your impression here, Ben?
Well, he's, you know, as is his way, he says the same thing over and over again, regardless of its validity or truth. And one of his most frequent phrases that he uses to defame VA staff and, frankly, the whole institution is that he has repeatedly referred to VA employees in public as recently as 2 weeks ago and probably even more recent as sadists and thieves. He brags about having fired 9,000 VA employees as a result. And he touts his what he calls the so-called Accountability Act, which really, in fact, disproportionately led to the unfair and unjust discharge of mostly people of color and non-managerial rank-and-file employees, many of whom were veterans who were not given due process in their discharges from the employment. He brags about that. And not only does he brag about firing 9,000 people and without fairness, he also has appointed, as I mentioned, Secretary Wilkie, who's a complete ideologue when it comes to the issues of unions and of justice. So Secretary Wilkie, who's Trump's man at the VA, has refused, he's the first secretary in decades, to refuse to meet with the AFGE and the National VA Council and writes op-eds and other, public documents that say that malign and attack the union. So we're really dealing with people that have no respect for the basic rights of VA employees to bargain collectively. And we've seen that both in their rhetoric, their local practices, and how they deal or don't deal with our union and negotiating table.
Yeah, it's all part of Trump's war on workers. In this case, it's VA workers. So we've got a number of cities, as I indicated, they're doing the call outs today. Maybe you can get specific on what's going to happen starting today all through America. What's the game plan here, Ben?
Yes, sir. It's going to look different in different parts of the country because, you know, people are taking action both on their lunch breaks before and after their shifts. We have a unified message that we're trying to send to Secretary Wilkie and really to the public to let them know how important this upcoming election is, how important understanding the history of Labor Day and the lifting of working people's issues up front and center. So we're going to be out there with signs that say, VA, stop union busting, fair contract now. Because that's exactly what they're doing. They're trying to, and just to be to the point here, they're moving a process through the, what they call the Federal Service Impact Panel, a group of Trump lackeys that are all anti-union attorneys, and they're going to try to impose this agreement after the bargaining unit rejects it, and they're going to try to impose it in the most undemocratic assault on public sector union rights perhaps in the history of this country. And that's coming up perhaps in the next couple of weeks prior, even prior to or immediately following the presidential election. So we're going to be out there. We're going to have opportunities for frontline clinical and non-clinical staff at the VA to share their stories during the pandemic, to talk about being victims of discrimination on the job, and to call for a fair contract. The VA has refused to meet with our union since last November, and only agreed after back and forth delays and tactics to try to undermine the process, has essentially just refused to bargain. We don't have the ability of the federal government to compel the VA to get back to the table. So what we are doing is we're taking matters into our own hands, so to speak, and these staff are saying enough is enough. And so hundreds of VA employees around the country, from Riverside, California, to Hampton, Virginia, and places all in between, will be taking action, and you should be expecting to see that in the both local and national news here in the coming days.
All right, let's run down some of the cities here. Today it's Milwaukee, Hampton, Virginia, and Columbus, Ohio. Seeing Las Vegas tomorrow. There's a lot happening on Labor Day. Leavenworth, Kansas. Two locals in St. Louis, 21, 92, and 96 on Labor Day. In Augusta, Georgia, local 217. Little Rock, Arkansas, local 2054. On Tuesday of next week, it's local 1969 in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And actually two of them. There's another one in Minnesota. It's 3669. So there's a lot going on. I would imagine that a lot of this is posted on the national website, afge.org. Ben, the bottom line is you're fighting for your livelihood right now, aren't you?
You know, I come from, and as you mentioned early on, you know, I'd come out of the Teamsters Union, and the Teamsters' largest private sector contract, obviously, is the UPS Master Agreement that has around 250,000 drivers and warehouse workers covered around the country. This is equivalent to that in its scale, and that's why Trump and Wilkie see it as the holy grail of their anti-union strategy in the federal sector. The bottom line is this: if Donald Trump wins re-election in November, it is assured that federal workers will have their rights whittled to little to nothing across the board, and it will begin at the VA. You know, it's already begun at the VA. They tested this out in other federal agencies and with other federal unions, but to a much more smaller scale. This is the Moby Dick of their strategy, and that's why it's so important that whether you're in the federal sector, you're in the public sector, but work for a state agency, you work for a private corporation, a publicly traded corporation, multinational employer, we all have to come together as working people right now, because our fundamental rights to collective bargaining are really at stake.
All right, Ben, we're going to leave it on that. No, you hang in there, my brother. You got a big fight on your hands, and we're behind you 100%. Ben Spate, director of the National VA Council Crisis Response Campaign. Get more at afge.org. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, Dorsey Hager, the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades, and an immigrant from El Salvador achieving the American dream. That story tomorrow. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.